Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in." And you're not only in, but you're in at the best program for you. Now, I've been an admissions consultant for, the last 20 years or so. And over the years, I've seen a lot written about graduate admissions, both good and bad. I've also lived and breathed graduate admissions, the ups and downs of many, many clients for the past 20 years. I've seen a lot of applicants focus exclusively on grades and test scores, the stats. They're easy to understand. They kind of latch onto them, especially if their own stats are good. And I've also seen others say something along the lines of, "My test score is so good. I'm a perfect fit for Program X." Program X frequently is Harvard. "Who cares what I got in my freshman and sophomore years of college?" Or that perhaps I did poorly my senior year. Well, I think there's both merit and flaws in both these approaches to graduate admissions. I think there's more flaws to them than merit, actually. The merit lies in the fact that what they're pointing to as their strength has value. The flaw is that the part of the application process that they are making light of is still important, and their claiming that it's not important doesn't make it so. So I've developed a framework that, with slight variations, works across all graduate categories. And if your application achieves the goals laid out in this four-part framework, then you should have a very good chance of acceptance. This framework really contains your marching orders if you are applying to graduate school, especially if it's a competitive graduate program. It is a holistic approach. And again, if you succeed with all four tasks I'm going to give you, you'll tremendously improve your personal acceptance rate. And the framework will also keep you focused on applying to the right programs for you. Because, again, you need to achieve all four goals to have a good chance of acceptance at any kind of competitive graduate program. You may be able to get away with less than all four if you're applying to programs that have higher acceptance rates and are less competitive. Before we launch into the framework, though, I'd like to take a second and remind you that if you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/110 and ask your question in a comment on the blog. We're developing a wonderful and thoughtful community here on Accepted, so feel free to comment there, share a concern, ask a question. Now, let's turn to the four must-haves for your grad school application. The reason I like this framework, as I indicated a minute ago, is that it's a holistic approach. It's not just saying your grades are important, your test scores are important, everything else doesn't count. It's not saying it's all about your experience, whether it's research experience or work experience or extracurricular activities. And it's not just all about something called fit, which is still pretty nebulous, I think, to most applicants. It's about all these things. So as long as you look at your application before you hit submit and you say, "I've achieved these four tasks in my application," you have a decent chance at the program you're applying to, whether it's Harvard, Stanford, or your local state college. Okay? Probably better at the local state college than at Harvard and Stanford, because the competition at those programs is intense. But if you don't accomplish all these four items, then my opinion is that, and I don't know the details, is that your chances at a competitive graduate program would be fairly poor. So I would strongly encourage you to make sure that every one of your applications to a competitive graduate program achieves these four tasks. And here they are. Number one, and this is just foundational for any graduate school application, you have to provide evidence that you can handle the academics. So if you're applying to a program that's quantitatively demanding, then you have to have high grades and demanding quantitative courses. You have to have a good GRE or GMAT score, whatever it is. You have to show you can handle the academics. And your grades in related courses should also be excellent. And Now, grades and test scores are the most common ways to show you can handle the academics, but not the only way. Sometimes it can be a post-baccalaureate coursework that will do it. Sometimes it might be certificates that you've acquired or demanding work experience. But usually we're talking about test scores and grades when we talk about showing you can handle the academics. That's number one. Number two, have a goal that requires the degree you want from the school you are applying to. Now, this may sound basic, right? You're not going to apply to business school if you want to become a doctor, presumably. You're not going to apply to medical school if you want to become a financial analyst. But there's lots of gray in there. The point here is that you have to have a relevant, attainable goal for the program you are applying to. And that means that, A, you need to know what you want to do with a degree. That's why many graduate programs have statements of purpose or goals essays. And two, you have to know the program you're applying to and its strength in order to show that you need this education. If you can show a logical progression between what you've done and studied in the past, what you want to do in the future, and how this program's strengths, extracurricular strengths, academic and curricular strengths, perhaps placement strengths, can help you get to where you want to go, then you've made a very, very good case for yourself. Realize that the schools want to know you're going to fit in. They want to know they can help you succeed. They want to know that you're not going to end up as a very unhappy customer. That's number two. Number three, most schools, many, many schools, have specific missions. Some schools very explicitly state their criteria for acceptance. You need to show that you meet those criteria and share those values, share that mission, that sense of mission. So, for example, schools like Harvard Business School, Stanford Graduate School of Business, Chicago, Booth, clearly lay out their criteria. They also have very clear mission statements. Stanford has it all over its site. Change lives, change organizations, change the world. And we're going to focus on Stanford, actually. Medical schools, Baylor, Case Western, and many others all have very specific missions, criteria for acceptance, and they talk about it on their website very clearly. They're not hiding this. This is not secret. And many, many academic graduate programs have a specific focus. I'm going to get to that later in the podcast. We'll highlight that. You need to understand what your program's specific focus is and how you are going to both take advantage of that focus and have had a similar focus in the past. And again, I'm not just talking about mouthing mission statements. I'm talking about demonstrating that you share values. And you need to highlight those aspects of your experience and background that show you share that mission and meet the criteria. And you need to do so in your essays, your activity history, your resume, and especially the secondaries for medical school students, and of course, interviews when you have interviews. For competitive programs, and this is the fourth part of the four-part framework, you also need to show how you are going to contribute something distinctive to your class. And that distinctive element can be an unusual personal background or experience, high level of achievement or leadership. You also have to make sure that you're describing your experience with enough specificity so that almost intrinsically you're going to stand out. If you talk in general terms about volunteering, well, let me give you an example. I've given a series of webinars, and I'll link to them in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/110, on getting into Columbia Business School, getting into Harvard Business School, getting into Stanford Business School, and we're also going to have one on Wharton. And in these webinars, and I've done this also for medical school students, and I've done this for all kinds of programs, and sometimes in-person, webinars, whatever, I'll ask applicants, how many of you have volunteered? Or I'll ask my audience. And usually more than 50% of the people can say that they volunteered in some capacity in college or since. Okay, fine. And then I'll ask them, how many of you have volunteered in a very specific way? How many of you helped build a house for Habitat for Humanity that a family with a disabled child was going to occupy? Well, then I might get 1%. So suddenly, volunteering had turned into a very specific kind of task and an identifier, a distinguisher. So I will do the same thing. I might ask, how many of you have traveled outside your home country? And again, I'll get over 50%, almost every time. And then I'll ask how many of you have gone trekking in New Zealand, or how many of you have climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and then I'll get very few. So I'm not saying that you have to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, Mount Everest, or have swam across the English Channel. Nothing like that. I am trying to say that if you describe what you have done in distinctive terms, well, then you are automatically distinguishing yourself and showing you that you have the individual experiences that would allow you to contribute something special to your class, to your program's community, and ultimately the alumni network, hopefully making the school proud that they have accepted you. And obviously you'd be also showing that you can contribute to the diversity of the class, and at this point there's a lot of research showing that when you have a lot of different backgrounds and experiences and perspectives in a classroom environment, that classroom is a richer learning experience. All right, so there's a four-part framework. One, show you can do the work and excel academically. Two, have a clear goal that requires a degree from the program you are applying to. That was number two, rather. Number three, show that you fit, that you share the values of the school, that you support its mission and have supported it in the past, not just because you're applying now. And four, show that you have something distinctive to contribute to the school, to the classroom discussion, to the school's community, and ultimately the potential to make the school very proud to have you as an alumnus. Now, note the first three, that you have the academic stats, that you have a goal requiring the program, and that you share the school's mission and values and meet its criteria, that's all about fit. Fit really is made up of those three elements. The fourth one, about distinctive contribution or contributing to diversity, that's about how you're going to stand out, how you're going to add something, bring something special to the table, and contribute something, again, distinctively to the school's class and community. All right, now let's talk up for a minute about how you can implement this with some of the different categories. So for MBAs, I think it's pretty clear. You need, number one, right, showing you can do the work, grades, and GMAT or GRE score. That's pretty basic. Again, I applied this framework with greater detail to Columbia Business School, Harvard Business School, and Stanford. We also have a Wharton webinar coming up. I will include a link to the registration page in the show notes. And you can also find it at reports.exhibit.com/MBA/Wharton. Again, reports.exhibit.com/MBA/Wharton. And it will be in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/110. So that's number one, show you can do the work and excel. Number two, have a goal that requires an MBA from the school you are applying to. So in order to be able to make that case, and you should be able to make it because why else are you applying to this program? You have to be able to make the case that your past experience plus the education that you're going to complete at your target program will prepare you for your chosen career path. That implies that A, you have a chosen career path, and B, that you know something about your target program so that you can provide evidence that it's what you really, really need. Realize that some programs, and Tuck and Wharton are examples of programs that are very explicit about this, make clear that a relevant, attainable goal is actually part of their evaluation of your application. Others are a little bit less explicit, and maybe it's because they're not quite as concerned about it, but no business school wants to admit to its class people who are going to end up unemployed or who are going to graduate and be unhappy, because they've now incurred a bunch of debt to do work that they really don't want to do. Your immediate post-MBA goal, which is usually the one that the schools are most concerned with, consists of what you want to do, in other words, a job function, and usually the industry in which you want to do it. Sometimes geography is relevant, usually it's not. Long-term goals sometimes play a role in MBA admissions, sometimes not. It also depends on the school and what they're specifically asking you. Most schools would be very interested in hearing if you hope to use your MBA to attain some greater societal good, or you have some greater aspiration than just, I want to become a strategy consultant for McKinsey and Bain or Booz. If you also hope to do something beyond that, either go into politics or ultimately start your own business and, again, achieve some greater good, they would be very interested in that information. But it's not mandatory, and don't make it up if it's not relevant. All right. Number two for MBAs, check the school's mission statement and criteria. And here I think Stanford is really, really clear. Their mission statement, as I mentioned earlier, is all over the law, all over the site, and it is change lives, change organizations, change the world. They are quite clearly looking for people who have been and will be change agents. Very, very clearly, when you are applying to business school, look to see what is the mission statement of the school. What is the motto of the school? They really don't write them just to pay a PR firm or something like that. There is meaning there. So in Stanford's case, again, they're looking for people who will be change agents. They're looking for people with initiative. They're also looking for students who are open to change within themselves, right? They're promising you a transformational program. Are you willing to be transformed? And they state their criteria very clearly. Intellectual vitality is number one. And this is more than just test taking and grades. It's more than just showing you can do the work. This is curiosity. This is critical thinking. This is an openness to new ideas and new experiences. Again, vitality, intellectual vitality. Number two of Stanford's three criteria is demonstrated leadership potential. If you've led in the past, then presumably you can lead in the future. And you're going to be more open to the leadership development that Stanford is promising to provide you. And of course, if you're going to be a change agent, if you're going to change organizations and ultimately change the world, you have to be able to lead. Otherwise, you can't affect change. And the third of Stanford's criteria is a little bit more harder to understand. It's personal qualities and contributions. Now, if you go through the site I don't think you have to go through that thoroughly, it'll become very clear to you that what Stanford is looking for is innovativeness and creativity in terms of personal qualities, along with initiative that I mentioned earlier. And again, of course, contributions. And a fundamental here is past behavior predicts future behavior. So when have you contributed in the past? Okay, that's something you're going to want to bring out, again, in your essays and your activity history. And for more on this, I would suggest you go watch the recording of the webinar, because I went into it in tremendous detail. And the fourth element is, how are you going to add to class, to stand out, contribute something distinctively? Realize that elite programs, competitive MBA programs, have many, many qualified applicants, more qualified applicants than they can possibly admit. And because they want this kind of rich learning environment with diverse perspectives, with diverse experiences, they're going to admit the people who are qualified who also bring that distinctive element to the class. So it can be a matter of the distinctiveness can be a matter of background and experience. It can be distinctive extracurricular activities. It can be an unusually high level of professional growth and achievement. It can be an individualistic approach and perspective on life or work or business. But for elite programs, it's rarely the test scores and grades that provide that kind of individualism that they're looking for. All right, now that was MBA programs. Again, I've gone through the four. Let me go through the four now for graduate schools. Let's say you're applying to an academic program, or perhaps one of the therapies that requires a statement of purpose, and maybe even a research statement. So again, A is show them you can do the work and excel. That's number one. And you have to look at the data. Are you competitive in terms of your GRE and GPA, and maybe even in terms of the subject test? Two, do you have a goal that requires what this program offers? The best way to show that is through your statement of purpose. It's asking about the purpose of your studies. And, of course, as I think I've mentioned this on the show previously, I once had a friend's daughter come to me for assistance with her statement of purpose. And I asked her, what does she want to do after she gets the degree? And she said, I don't know. And I said, well, how do you want to write a statement of purpose if you don't have a purpose? And she admitted that she had to go figure that out. Now, for graduate applicants, especially those in the more academic realm, your research interest is very important, especially for research-oriented programs. So that is, and again, purpose implies you have a good reason for pursuing this degree at this school. And you're not just extending your academic career because you liked school and you want to avoid adulthood and responsibility in the working world. Then number three, you want to show fit with culture and the strengths of the program. Do you have interests that match those of the faculty at the program you are applying to? That's crucial, especially when you're applying for PhDs. For more on this element and how lack of fit can sink even a candidate with very high stats, listen to episode 113, actually, on the site, infodexip.com/113, which is when I interviewed the former director of graduate admissions for Hofstra University, Carol Drummer, who is currently an accepted consultant. And she spoke about this quite a bit, but just to highlight one point she made, there was an applicant to Hofstra with amazing stats who was rejected to its psych program. And Carol Drummer was shocked when the faculty rejected this applicant, and she asked them why. Well, this applicant had a background of Freudian schooling, she attended a psych program that was Freudian, and Hofstra's was a behavioral modification program. So the training she had gotten was, in their view, somewhat irrelevant. And they rejected her on that basis, even though her academics were stellar. And then the fourth one, again, is, are you going to contribute to class discussion, the program's community, and ultimately the school's reputation? So that's pretty much the same across the board. Now let's apply these four principles to medical school. One, show you can handle the work in medical school. This is absolutely critical. It's extraordinarily demanding. And you're going to do that primarily through your MCAT score and your grades. And, of course, you have to show that your grades and MCAT score are similar to those of accepted applicants at the programs you're interested in. If your grades are not up to snuff, then you might want to consider a post-bac or a specialized master's program, or perhaps you'll consider osteopathic medical schools or even PA, some alternative to allopathic medical schools. You obviously have to have a goal that requires an MD. You need to show that you want to be a physician. And you may even want to indicate whether you're primarily interested in primary care or specializing. But the main thing you want to show here is that you have the experience that you know what you're getting into when you say, I want to be a physician, I want to go to medical school, I want to do have the demands that's put upon me, the responsibility that's put upon me, because ultimately you need to convince the school that you're going to be a great, compassionate, caring physician. And then you have to show fit with the school's mission. And this is primarily the job of the secondary applications and the interviews for medical school. And again, I would urge you, examine the mission statements of the schools that you are applying to when you're filling out those secondary applications, and look at special programs at your target schools that really appeal to you and attract you. So if you're applying to a school where research is a requirement in the course of medical school, like Case Western, have you done research in the past? And if you haven't done research in the past, how are you going to show fit, at least with that element of Case Western's program? The schools don't want to think that you just apply to every program with an MCAT score within, two or three points of your total or whatever range you want to use. I guess it's still on the, they're switching to the new MCAT, but so we're still talking mostly in terms of the 45-point scale. And four, how are you going to contribute? And again, this can be a matter, it's very similar to the MBA. When have you contributed in the past? Have you been a leader in the past? Have you taken initiative in the past? And of course, is your personal background and experience distinctive and in some way going to contribute a unique perspective to the classroom environment? Do you have the distinctive experiences, background, and perspective that will contribute to the school's community and your peers' education? Law school, again, you can use the same framework, but with a slight wrinkle. You need to show you can handle the law school curriculum. The most common way is through your undergraduate GPA and the LSAT. And then, do you have a goal that requires a JD? Now, this traditionally was much less important for law school. I think that the implosion of the law school job market has changed that. It's no longer just good enough to think that law school is a foundation for something, but you're not quite sure what. So make it clear that you know what law school is about, you know what being a lawyer is about, or you have some very, very concrete reasons why you want a law degree and go, I mean, you want to ultimately do something else. Then, again, show fit with the school's mission and strengths. Again, review the school's mission statement and criteria. What are the strengths of the program? How would you take advantage, perhaps, of a moot court, externships, practica, special clinics that they may offer? How do you intend to take advantage of these? First, research them, and then discuss those that are relevant to you and to achieving your goals. For more competitive programs, you also have to show the ability to contribute to class and community. Again, past contributions, you can point to them. And you need, like with the other programs, you need to describe your background and experience so that you're highlighting your individuality. You know, don't talk in generalities, write in terms of specifics. Okay, so I think I've shown you that this framework can be used for really any graduate application with minor modifications. It's a holistic approach to the graduate process. It's up to you to make sure that each application you're submitting shows that you completed all four steps in this process or this framework if you want to get accepted to top programs. And again, the four steps are, one, show you can do the work and excel. And here I'm talking the academics. Two, have a goal that requires the degree and education that you're pursuing, the degree and the education and the degree that are provided by the particular program you're applying to. Three, show fit with the program's mission and values and show that you meet its stated criteria. And four, demonstrate that you'll contribute distinctively to the program's class, community, and ultimately to its reputation. Now, I guess you need to go out there and use this framework to get accepted. And if you would like to get accepted, the company to assist you in making sure that you've achieved all four goals, please feel free to contact us or review our services at www.accepted.com/services. Listener, I want to thank you for joining me. I really appreciate your time. Now, if you have questions for me, please ask it at info.accepted.com/110 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.